Bonjour et bienvenue au Canon Cast, un programme à la demande hebdo amateur de The Canon, un blog SB Nation dédié à vos Blue Jackets de Columbus. And my apologies, I just thought I needed to butcher the French language as much as Gary Bettman and various GMs did in Montreal last week. This is the CanonCast. I am your host, PD. I am joined by Dale Bloom, and we have a lot to talk about because last week was the NHL draft. We have seven new members of the Blue Jackets organization. So, Dale, to start, let's start with the big picture here. How do you think the Blue Jackets did? What grade would you give to their draft class this year?
Yeah, you know, I thought the Blue Jackets did a great job. You know, A-minus, B-plus area, I think. I think they could have had their top two picks maybe go a little bit differently, kind of depending on what the teams in front of them had done. But I think that given what the position that they were in, I think that they did a pretty good job. You know, I think we all wanted centers. You know, a lot of us had said that we wanted centers. We didn't get any within the first two picks. But, you know, I think that the overall strategy, I think Yarmo did what he always does is he thought who he picked the best player available was. Right. And at the end of the day, that's exactly what he did.
Yeah, and as a result, I feel like, especially on day two, there were a lot of good value picks, and we'll maybe get into some of them here a little later. But there's certainly a lot to be intrigued about in this class. There's certainly a lot of upside in this class. And again, there's a lot of it's hard to predict about prospects, you know, especially when you get outside of the top 10. Can be a little bit of a coin flip there. Sometimes it depends on the player landing in the right environment, landing in the right scheme, staying healthy, all those sorts of things. And of course, you know, we've got a group of players here who some of them lost an entire year of their development, you know, like the OHL didn't have a season in 2020-21. So, you know, that could affect the way that some of these players are projected going forward. But yeah, let's go ahead and start with the first pick. The Jackets were picking at number six for the second year in a row, and they selected a defenseman, David Jiříček from Czechia. He is a big-bodied right-hand shot defenseman. It's really not too hard to envision him being on the right side of the top pair next to Zach Werenski for the long term. What do you think about Jiříček?
Yeah, I mean, I'm really excited about Jiříček. Personally, I wanted Cutter Gauthier, but that didn't happen. I think he's going to be a stud, and he's going to fit in really well with the Flyers. But Jiříček, he was the no-brainer there at that number six pick. He's a big guy. He's good on his feet. He's got a heck of a shot. You know, you want to compare him to, you know, the bigger guys across the league that have those shots, Alex Pietrangelo, the, you know, Victor Hedman, those guys. And he is, we saw a few clips from him in development camp today, which started today, and, you know, just hitting top corners with some feeds. And I think that he has the chance to be possibly the best all around defenseman this franchise has ever seen.
Wow.
You know, I'm not saying that he's going to put up Zach Werenski or Seth Jones type numbers on offense, but I can envision this guy being very good defender. And, you know, as far as all around defenders go, offense and defense put together, I think that he has a chance to be very, very good for this organization.
Yeah, I would look for him to be like a David Savard with better hands and possibly better skating. And, man, I just am so impressed with his size. You know, you saw him next to Ville Sirén, who was also an NHLer in his own right and still looks like a pretty big dude. And, you know, Jiříček was towering right next to him. Yeah, I saw a clip of him laying a hit. He crushed Michael Pitya into the boards. I love seeing hits like that. And yeah, much better puck work than I would have expected from, you know, a defenseman and a defenseman of that size. You would expect him to be just a bruiser, but he has the talent as well. And yeah, as recently as maybe 2 weeks ago, I did not think that he would fall this far. you know, the way a lot of people expected the top of the draft to go, and knowing that teams like New Jersey, Seattle, and Philadelphia all could use defensemen, it seemed like both of these top two defensemen would be off the board by number six. But then, you know, some teams went in a different way and the draft unfolded a little bit differently. And once Seattle picked Shane Wright at number four, which, you know, shocked everyone by him falling that far, then I'm like, wow, we're going to get either Cutter Gauthier or David Yurecek, depending on what Philadelphia did. And I would have been very, very happy with either outcome. So getting a guy that solves a lot of issues on the right side of the defense for the foreseeable future is really good.
Yeah, he's got a great chance to be just the perfect partner with Zach Werenski. I mean, a guy that can still move the puck, can shoot the puck hard, can still skate, but someone who is going to be probably a little bit better of a stay-at-home guy, can push guys out of the way in front of the net. You know, if you're comparing him to Nimitz, you know, Nimitz would have been awesome too if that's the way the draft had shook out. But
yep,
you could probably envision Yurecek being a little bit more of an ideal partner for Zach Werenski.
For sure. Well, both of them were large right-hand shot defensemen, so either one would have fit that role for sure. How quickly do you think he will make the NHL?
You know, I say he probably goes back to Europe next year, this next season. You know, you would kind of maybe see like him to see move up to Liga or maybe go to Sweden, to a little bit better of a league. But I don't think it's out of question that he makes the team out of camp. You know, it's going to be an uphill battle for sure. But after what happened with Cole Sillinger last year, you never know. And this team needs somebody on the right hand side too. It's something that they've been struggling with over the last few seasons.
For sure. So that'll be one to watch. I hope he gets a shot, and we'll see how he does with it. Now he did have an injury mid season that wiped out about half his year, but he was able to recover and play in the World Championships for Czechia. So he seems to be fine now, but maybe he might want him to have another season of lower level competition to, you know, get that knee fully healed. So then at number 12, a lot of us were looking, okay, what center are they going to take? But instead the Jackets went with another defenseman, Denton Matejczuk. Again, I'm going to have trouble pronouncing that correctly. He's a Western Canada guy. He's playing in the Western Hockey League, a bit undersized, listed at 5'10", 194, but extremely skilled. Some people are comparing him to perhaps a Cale Makar type, which is obviously very high praise. I think Corey Promen said Shane Gostisbehere, so that's maybe a more reasonable expectation, but still a very good player. But he fits this sort of newer mold of defensemen that don't need to be super big, but great skaters, great with the puck, and can get the puck up ice and help defensively in that way. I know you at the time were very disappointed that we didn't go center there. Now that you've had time to reflect on it, has your opinion on the pick changed?
Yeah, it has. And I would admit that I didn't know much about Matejczuk going into the draft. And doing a lot of reading and some video watching on him after the draft, it's pretty clear that, you know, compared to most of the other guys, if not all the guys that were available at 12, he probably has the highest floor. Mm-hmm. Now, there is upside there too, right? I think there's a lot of upside there, but he has a high floor. And, you know, there's a lot of people that think that he has a very, very good chance at being an NHLer long-term and, you know, probably fits in second pair. You know, after he's done developing. So when you're sitting at that spot, Yarmo probably wants the guy that is more surefire than maybe taking a swing. Mm-hmm. And I understand that. You know, I really wanted maybe a Frank Naser. You know, Lambert probably proved to be a bit of a reach there. But then you look at the way it shook out. Geeky got taken right before. And you do really wonder that if Geeky doesn't go right before, if, you know, he is a Columbus Blue Jacket today. But that's not how it worked out. Yarmo picked the guy that he thought was the best available. This guy's probably going to play in the NHL, and he's got probably a little bit higher of a ceiling than maybe a lot of the other guys that were available at that spot.
Yeah, and I think it's totally fair to be disappointed that we didn't get a center there. But I also think we shouldn't let that sour our opinion of this particular player, because by all accounts, he could end up being a very special one. And he's also a bit of a project. So I think he's still 17 or was like just going to turn 18 this week or something. So he's going to spend another 2 years in the WHL, I think, before he's ready to go pro. But I think that once he does go pro, he could be a guy with his skill level that could enter the lineup right away. And, you know, this makes it three defensemen that we drafted in the last two first rounds. And when you consider Zach Werenski, who is signed long-term, when you consider Adam Boqvist, who just signed a three-year contract last week, you could have five first-round picks on the blue line here just a few years down the line. That's pretty exciting.
It is exciting. And, you know, you can throw in Stanislav Svozil into that. I mean, that was a guy that was projected in the first round by several people last year, but he, you know, after, you know, before slipping all the way to the third round, there's a lot of defense. There's a lot of defense. You can throw Samuel Konasko into that, who's showing a lot of promise. You know, you have Richard, who, you know, won awards as a freshman at Providence, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, these are all guys, add Jake Christensen to that. You know, these are all guys that aren't just defensive prospects, but they're promising prospects now at this point. And the best you can hope for at this point is that all these guys pan out, because if that happens, it's going to be trade assets. These guys are going to be moved for other players. There's just too many. You know, especially when you talk about, you know, these probably aren't guys that some of these guys, if they pan out to be really good NHLers, you know, you're probably going to trade them versus putting them on the third line. So, I think somebody posted a potential lineup, you know, after the draft kind of shook out the way it was. You have Werenski, you have Kulim, you have Werenski with maybe Yerchuk on the right side. Then you have Matejchuk with maybe Kuhlman's on the right side. You know, where does that leave Boqvist? Is he on the third pairing or what? But, you know, either way you look at it, some of these guys are going to pan out, and, you know, some of them don't. You're still looking at a very good core here in a few years.
Yeah. So I like that there's the competition there. All of these defensemen can push each other, and we're not putting all of our eggs in one basket of like, oh, we hope this one prospect works out and fills this hole in the defense. We've got options. And yeah, if we have too many that are good, that are NHL level, then those are trade chips. And especially the number of right-handed defensemen we've added, because those are always at a premium. So the more we have, teams are always going to be looking for those guys. And that's how we can swing a trade for perhaps a center down the line, if that's still a hole that we need to fill. Speaking of centers, we were wondering, all right, well, are they going to get some centers on day two? And sure enough, their first pick on day two, overall pick number 44 was, this is a great name, Luca Delbel-Belouz, who we should point out, with Mississauga, he was roommates with another Jackets prospect, Ole Julian Bjorkvik-Holm. This is like, what a tremendous name combination.
We got arguably the best name in the draft. And for those of you who didn't see it on Twitter today, there were some pictures floating around of his nameplate on his jersey, and it's just fantastic.
Yeah, the L and the Z were kind of like stuck under the folds at the edge of his shoulders. Like I said, my dude, he's got to bulk up there in the upper body so that there's room to fit his name across his shoulders there. That was amazing.
Yes, absolutely. But you look at the player too. You know, for those out there who maybe aren't familiar, this is a kid that rose quickly. He didn't have a good rookie year in the OHL. Had a very good second year. And keep in mind, just like you said, Pale, a lot of these guys are guys that missed a full entire year of development at a very critical age. And this guy's one of them. You know, a lot of the guys at the Blue Jackets picked later on in this draft are guys that kind of got knocks for their skating. This guy's too slow. This guy doesn't have good acceleration. This guy has an awkward stride. And this is one of them. But by all accounts, this is a player that has good vision. He's got a good shot. Go check out some of his videos on YouTube. He's got great hands. He's very possession minded. He's able to hold on to the puck and drive play like you want a center to be able to do. So they're going to work on this guy. You know, he's not a high-end prospect. He's not a surefire thing. But I thought he's a very good pick at 44. I probably would have picked him earlier if I was a different team. As you know, PD, I had him pegged earlier. This is a guy that as soon as we hit our 12th pick, I said that we got to go get this guy. And we did. If he can shore up his skating, his stock is going to rise very quickly. And hopefully he ends up playing a good top nine role for the Jackets.
Yeah. And I think it was maybe Corey Promen who said that his skating issue was mechanical and made it sound like it's something that can be worked on. So, and now that he's in the organization, you know, we have development staff for a reason. These guys will talk to him. They'll give him tips. They'll work with him. Someone, I forget, was in the comments or in our Slack, they mentioned that Matejchuk's mom is a former figure skater and is now a skating coach. And she taught Matejchuk how to skate so well. So yeah, maybe bring her into the organization. Maybe she can be a skating consultant for everyone here. But yeah, LDBB, he put up 76 points in 68 games in the OHL last year. And something else that he did that intrigues me, people pointed out that so when Mississauga played Kingston, LDBB was the center that was paired up against Shane Wright.
Interesting. I did not know that.
Yeah, and he was apparently able to hold his own against Shane Wright. So if this is a guy that can definitely contribute as a 200-foot center, and yeah, I don't see him as being our 1C. I don't see him becoming like a Braden Point type riser for us. But if he becomes a maybe Artem Anisimov type center, like that's a super useful player to have in the system. Every team needs a guy like that.
A long-term top nine center from the second round is a win every single time. And if he turns out to just be that, a really good 3C, absolutely nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, a 3C that could maybe play up a little bit, maybe even a William Karlsson type. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would absolutely take that.
He's 6'1", too, so he's not a small guy. So he's already got that build for it, too. So,
oh, for sure. And room to grow, absolutely. In the third round, at the very end of the third round, the Jackets took what might be their most interesting player for me. Guy Jordan Dumais, who was not high on a lot of rankings, but the people that did have him on their rankings loved this kid. Thomas Drance, who covers the Canucks, he tweeted, I think when it was still in the second round, any team that doesn't pick Dumais after this point is making a mistake. And so, you know, lots of teams passed him as many as three times, but the Jacks took him. This is a guy, he is undersized. He's listed at 5'8". He's not considered a great skater. So, you know, if you're small, it helps to be quick, and he's neither small nor quick, but he's effective. He put up 108 points in 68 or 109 points in 68 games in the queue last year. So again, this is a guy I think is going to need to take a couple years still to season. But the fact that he's already putting up those kind of numbers, this is a guy who has skill that could perhaps overcome the physical limitations there.
This is where NHL scouts and GMs just get a little weird, in my opinion. Because listen, if Jordan Dumais is an inch taller and a little bit better of a skater, he goes in the first round, no question.
Yeah.
So why you let a player like that, 109 points in 68 games, slip all the way down to the 96th pick, the last pick in the third round, is just, it's beyond me. And I admit that I didn't know anything about the player going into the draft, but like you said, there were people screaming on Twitter that how could you let a guy like this fall this far. So it's really exciting. It's a kind of a lottery pick at that when you start the third, fourth, fifth round, it's a lottery pick anyway. So pick the guy that has the highest upside. Who cares if his floor is maybe a little bit lower. And man, if he turns out, you think of an Oliver Bjorkstrand. Yep. I mean, how well he turned out for the Blue Jackets. He's a little bit bigger, but he put up similar numbers at his post draft year. I love the pick. I love taking big swings like that.
Yeah, I made that same comparison this morning in the article I wrote where I noticed that, Bjorkstrand put up the same number of points, 109 points and a similar number of games, but that was in his post-draft season, whereas Dumé was doing it in his pre-draft season. And now, sure, the Q is a little more offensive-focused than WHL is, but Bjorkstrand's a guy who is bigger than Dumé, but is not a big guy by any means, and is not a great skater for his size, but is an effective player. Great hockey sense, works hard, sees the game well, has great puck skill, and I think Dumé has a lot of those things. So again, it'll take a few years, but I'm excited to see if he can get it together. On the other side of the spectrum, from a 5'8 winger to a winger that is 6'6", 234. My God, this guy is a power forward in the NBA with those stats here. Kirill Dolzhenkov, a Russian player. Man, I can't imagine a 6'6" winger. I saw a clip of him doing a lacrosse style goal this past season, and it's like he didn't even have to like bend over to get leverage. He didn't even have to like raise the stick that much to get it at the top part of the goal. Like, just made it look effortless. Again, with the Russia situation, we don't know how long it's going to take to get him over here, but this is a guy that if he does come over at some point, could be very good. There's a writer, Patrick Bacon, at Top Down Hockey, who was posting cards for every player as they got drafted, and he has this model that gives a percentage to the chances that a player becomes an NHLer and becomes a star. And Dolzhenkov was, I think, in the top 20 on his list.
Top 10.
To become even a star player, it's like an 18% chance of becoming a star player for a guy that went at 109th in the draft. That's really interesting. And I think it comes down to he's a guy that's been putting up points in the junior level there, and he's already got the NHL build at 18 years old. So that's another very, very interesting pick to me.
Yeah, and again, it goes back to kind of what we're talking about Dumé. He's not a good skater. It's like, so what? The guy is 6'6". He's got good hands, right? Yeah. That package, you can't find that package very often. So you teach the guy to skate a little bit. And, you know, even if he turns out to be a top nine forward in any way, shape, or form, he's going to be a force to be reckoned with. With that kind of size. So again, fourth round pick, you're swinging for the moon. I absolutely love it. Let's just take the giant swing and hope you hit a home run. And I think it was one of the NHL Central scouts tweeted out that watching him play against U20 players was just comical because of how big he is. And you know, I'm sure that he was just able to skate circles around those guys, though, even though he's, you know, maybe not have a good stride or whatever, but you know, hopefully could be 4 or 5 years, like you said, till we get to see this guy over in North America, if he comes at all. But definitely an interesting pick. I love picking those kind of guys. I'm all for it.
Yeah, and I wonder if he would have gone higher if there weren't the concerns surrounding the current Russia situation. Yeah. with you know, even players having trouble leaving the country at the moment, which is a really, really scary situation. You know, and Yarmo was asked about that factor and if that affected how they did it. And he acted like it wasn't a factor, and that he said, oh, you know, this was the right time to take that player. But I do wonder if even the Jackets would have taken him higher. But at this point in the fourth round, he was just too much of a talent to pass up at that point. When, again, all these players at this point in the draft are lottery tickets, so might as well take a guy with that kind of very rare combination of size and skill.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
With the fifth round pick, they actually traded next year's fifth round pick to get into this year's fifth round, where they no longer had a pick. And they took a goalie, Sergei Ivanov, again, another Russian player. He is undersized for a goalie, just 5'11", but the Jackets don't seem to put too much stock in size for a goalie. They have drafted smaller goalies in the past. Veni Vevalainen was another one who was like that. I was just happy that they got a goalie. I think this was not a super deep draft for goalies, but I'm glad that they got another one to have in the system, because, and I think we've discussed this before, I think it's just good to every year or every other year take a goalie just so you have more options in your system.
Absolutely. You look at their depth chart right now, you have Jet Greaves at number four. Mm-hmm. There's not really anybody behind him. You know, you could always find somebody in a pinch, but like you said, you always want to keep those guys in the pipeline. I saw somebody tweet out, I don't remember who it was, but somebody tweeted out and said that this was the goalie they had their eye on to potentially, you know, be the pick, a good goalie pick in the last couple rounds or in the latter half of the draft. So they traded up to get him from with a pick from next year. So obviously they really liked the guy and they wanted to get him. So positive things all around there, I think.
Yep. And then finally, in the seventh round, they took James Fisher, who was a high school player, which you don't see a lot of guys drafted right out of high school. A lot of these NHLers tend to, you know, play for, you know, AAA club teams and things like that. But he's a high school player. He's going to play in the USHL this coming year. And then I think he's already committed to Northeastern University. So he's a Massachusetts kid, 6'2 already. So again, they're going for size with a lot of these picks.
I would just be interested to know how they find these players in the high
school. That's a good question. Yeah.
The very last pick of the first round was a high school kid.
Hmm.
I cannot remember where he was from or what his name was, but I remember them talking about that at the draft. So it's just really interesting to be able to, you know, to pick some of those guys straight out of high school. You kind of wonder how they find them, especially a guy that goes in the seventh round. Sure, why not? You know, they see something they like in him, and who knows, maybe him flying under the radar, not having the development, you know, maybe a guy like that works out in the end.
Yeah, we'll see. With the time we have left, do you have any thoughts about, first of all, any thoughts about development camp happening this week? Anything that has stood out to you from that so far, or things that you're looking forward to with the 3-on-3 tournament coming up on Wednesday?
Yeah, it's gonna be fun. I always love the 3-on-3 tournament every single year. One big note, one big happening was that Kirill Marchenko was able to make it into the U.S. And Aaron Portzline today said that he has plans to stay in the U.S. So he will not be leaving.
Good.
So that's really good news. That's great to know. For the last few years, I've been really excited, really been itching to see this guy in Columbus. You know, I think that he is going to be a good NHLer. So really excited for this to become official finally. It seems like it's been forever, you know, even though the guy's only 22, right?
Right.
So excited about that. And then to see Kent Johnson, Michael Pitya. You know, excited to see him after the year that he had. A couple of these professional guys, you're kind of just hoping that they really stand out and have a good camp.
Yeah, and it sounds like, day one, Marchenko did look like a guy that has been playing at a high level last few years, you know, internationally and professionally. It was also neat to see, like, pretty much every beat writer that was on site was saying something similar on Twitter after Marchenko met with the media, just that they were totally charmed by him, that he answered, you know, in English and had a great personality, and so... for all these years, I think people were worried, like, oh, is Marchenko even going to want to come over to North America? But it sounds now like this is a guy that, he definitely wanted to be an NHLer, was always looking forward to doing this, and is now really excited for the opportunity. And I hope that he is comfortable here. Certainly he comes here with a greater grasp of English than, say, Chinakov did. Hopefully he and Chinakov can bond, become friends, and Chinakov maybe help him adjust. Just hope he gets comfortable here, and hopefully that his game as well is NHL ready. And finally, on Wednesday is the start of free agency. Now, I don't expect the Jackets to be big players on the market. I don't know that they have a lot of room on the roster for adding anyone new. Do you expect them to do anything this week?
No, not really. You know, I'm really the only guy that I'm super intrigued by is Dylan Strome.
Yes.
You know, it's a long shot, and, you know, there's no really reason to think why he would sign in Columbus right now. But if he were interested and there were a shot there, they should be all over that. He would be a great addition. You know, the Blackhawks aren't qualifying him because of their want to completely and utterly tank and possibly have a historically bad team next year for the chance of getting Bedard. But he's only 25, so if you were able to sign him to a long-term contract, it would still make sense. You know, he is a solid second line center with proven success in the NHL. So go all in for him if it's even possible. But if not, I don't really see anybody else, you know, unless there's some sort of intriguing, you know, veteran guy that they think would fit in well with the group that could be a good mentor to the young guys. Maybe if they could find like a third line center, you know, that would fit in well with the group and mentor the young guys, or a veteran defenseman. I could see them, you know, finding one of those guys on a 1 or 2 year deal. But outside of that, no, I don't expect them to be very active this week.
Yeah, Strom is a guy that he's still young enough that I would definitely give him a long-term deal if that's what it would take to entice him, maybe a 5 or 6 year offer. And I think he would then make the center situation a lot clearer. Because he's a guy that you could definitely put in there in the middle of the lineup at center. I'm really surprised that Chicago couldn't find any takers to give up even some draft picks for his rights, and that Columbus wouldn't even be on that. That's really odd to me that they would just let him go for nothing.
It's weird. It's almost like they just decided last minute that this was the direction that they were going to go in, and they just didn't have time, and they just kind of threw plans together at the draft. They were just trying to swing trades any way they possibly could to get first round picks. It just seemed weird to me all around.
Yeah, and they traded Kirby Doc, who's still just 21 years old. Like, yeah, that's a guy that I would think that you could build around even as you're doing a rebuild, you know, and instead they traded him for a pick they spent on Frank Nazar, who I don't know has any more upside than Kirby Doc did. You know, yeah, certainly a much smaller player at the same position. That's it's weird.
Yeah.
But if Chicago's bad, I will enjoy Chicago being bad. So that's
always
that's
and problem. Forever.
Yeah. Apologies to Seth Jones, because I'm sure that's not what he signed up for with that 8-year deal. All right. Any final thoughts before we go?
Yeah, I think the only thing worth mentioning is that the Blue Jackets opted to not qualify Gabriel Carlson and Kevin Stenlund today. You know, kind of surprised on Carlson. You know, you think that they probably would have kept him around for another year. You know, that didn't happen, and move on from him, which is probably for the best. You got other guys wanting to come up and play. So Kevin Stenlund, too, that's expected. Really sad. I was really high on him for a while. Really liked his game. But you know, he just couldn't stick in the NHL. So best of luck to those two guys.
Yeah, they were always good teammates. They, you know, dealt with a lot of tough situations in terms of, you know, not getting to get consistent playing time that much. Stenlund, I thought, you know, there were a lot of times where he looked good in small bursts, and I thought deserved more of a chance than he got. Carlson, though, was a guy that even as he got opportunities, was just clearly to me not at the level that he needed to be in, and now there's just better options in the organization. So nothing against the guy personally, but I think it was the right decision to move on from him. All right, that'll do it for us this week. Check back in next week. We'll be looking back over what happened in free agency, what moves the Jackets might make, what trades they might make as all this is going on, or you know, at least just talk about what all the other teams around us are doing, because there's lots of moving going on at the draft. I expect a lot more happening in free agency. Yeah, teams are maybe getting a little weird. And as a neutral observer, that's fun to watch for sure. So we will catch you next time. For more content from The Cannon, go to jacketscannon.com. You can also follow The Cannon on Facebook and on Twitter at CBJCannon. If you like this podcast, please leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. And be sure to subscribe on Apple, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Our theme music is the song Green Eyes by Angela Purley and the Howlin' Moons. Go to angelapurley.com for more music and show dates.